Hey, it's Andrew, Director of Literary Arts. Welcome to the very first episode of our new podcast series, Long Distance, from the Archive Project. The Archive Project was launched in 2014 in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. Each episode is an hour-long talk or conversation, usually from a Portland Arts and Lectures or Portland Book Festival live event. The episodes feature everything from events that took place 20 years ago to conversations from the most recent festival. The show is broadcast on OPB on Wednesdays at 10 p.m., but you can listen anytime, wherever you get your podcasts. Today, we're launching Long Distance, a series of podcast episodes that will be shorter in length and focus on exciting new books by authors we love. We felt this was an important project to take on in a time when bookstores are not able to host in-person readings and events. We hope that you'll be inspired to buy these books from your local indie bookstore. These podcasts are being recorded remotely, and I'm thrilled to introduce to you Amanda Bullock, our own Director of Public Programs, who is choosing the writers to feature and talking with them about their books. So we hope you enjoy this first episode, and we would love it if you'd let us know what you think.
Welcome to Long Distance from the Archive Project. I'm Amanda Bullock, Director of Public Programs at Literary Arts. For our premiere episode, I was thrilled to chat via Zoom, definitely my most entertaining Zoom meeting of quarantine so far, with Kristen Arnett, whose novel Mostly Dead Things just came out in paperback from Tin House Books. I love this book so much. It's very Florida, which has become its own literary genre, and rightfully so, being a large and strange country unto itself. Mostly Dead Things is dark and funny, a family story about queerness, taxidermy, and grief. I called Kristen, who has been sheltering in Las Vegas on a fellowship with the Black Mountain Institute, from my home in Portland. We talked about tenderness, how to figure out what's funny, and trying to read in these anxious times. Take a listen.
So to start, thanks for being here, Kristen, from Vegas.
Yeah.
Before we get started with questions, I would love to ask you to read from Mostly Dead Things.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you for having me. I'm just going to read like the first two pages of the opening chapter because I think that gives you like a feel of what the book's about. So if you like taxidermy, then this book is for you. How we slice the skin. Carefully, that's a given. Cutting with precision sounds like the same thing, but it's not. Consider the following. You've pared the flesh from a mango for a bowl of fruit salad. Have you done it thoughtfully, preserving the sweet yellow flesh, or have you done it with the clinical detachment of a surgeon? There's gotta be some tenderness. There's gotta be some love. Our father said this as he slid his knife into the coat of a white-tailed buck. It was unusual. He never let us close to the table while he worked. You gotta want it. He pointed to the throat, tapping lightly with a fingertip. Start below the cape, here, like you're unzipping a jacket. Milo and I crowded at either side of the metal table as our father gently opened the body, his hands blue-gloved and steady, as if delivering a baby. We were 9 and 10 and treated the shop with its creatures like our personal toy store. Other kids had stuffed animals. We had preserved skinks and mounted bass and antlers coated with therophane. Give me a little elbow room, guys. We each stepped back half a foot, then moved in close a few seconds later. The buck was large, but I'd seen bigger. The deer had already been drained of its blood and lay limp, limbs sprawled like a dismantled puppet. It was a 9-pointer, and the man who brought it to the shop was a regular, someone our father had over beers in our living room. Why the whole deer? This wasn't just a mount. The entire animal would be processed, chest, rump, legs. I couldn't imagine why someone would keep the whole thing as a trophy. Most hunters left the remains to rot out in the woods after field prep. Our father's eyes were bright with excitement. It was a new challenge for him, a way to put creativity into his work. He hummed under his breath. It made me want to sing too. Inside was cool with the constant hum of central air, but still humid enough to draw sweat over my lip. The sign in front of the shop was just as big and yellow as it had been when our grandfather ran the place. Morton's Taxidermy and More. The marquee promoted sales, whatever was in excess that week, pig ears, deer antlers, rabbit pelts. Our father didn't look at us while he spoke, just kept his voice with a low buzz that zinged in my brain. If it's not done with some kind of feeling, the customers can tell. It won't look real.
Okay, I'll stop there. It's good.
Thank you so much.
I love that you read from the beginning. I feel so much of the book is in that small scene. And you introduce this idea of tenderness immediately. When did you realize that you could bring tenderness into taxidermy, which seems like a violent thing?
Yeah. So it started off like the taxidermy part started off as just a curiosity and an interest of mine. It was something like most of us do, we get like obsessive about something and then we start just thinking about it all the time. And for me, it was kind of taxidermy. I was looking at like really goofy, terrible pictures of taxidermy online just for fun. And it turned into a short story, which turned into this novel. Like I scrapped the short story and just started like thinking like more broadly, like what this would look like as a novel. And as I was doing research for it, I was going onto these web forums for people who like make taxidermy, like taxidermy at home, or people who are like either amateurs or also like have their own businesses, and just kind of like sitting inside the forums, not contributing, but just reading how different people would talk about it. And one of the things I noticed was, first of all, a lot of the people in these forums were like very traditional kind of masculinity, like traditional kind of men. And they would do like tips and tricks and like, this is cheaper, use this instead. But another thing I noticed was that when people had like created a project, something they worked on for a while, they would submit a picture of it and post about it. And the way that they would talk about these things they created, I was like, oh, this is art for them. Like this is like a way for them to show this kind of like, this kind of way that they're approaching work that they've made, that they feel tenderness and very passionately about, but maybe they wouldn't be able to like traditionally, because maybe like art feels like too feminized in some kind of way. Because the way that these traditionally masculine men, who like many of them are like, these were kills that they'd made. The way that they'd set them or talked about them, the way that they'd like put them together was always in this language that was like inherently very tender, like a softness in talking about these kinds of works. And I was like, that's where it like that came from for me. Because I was like, this is a way that people who can't normally get into this kind of in touch with their own feelings about, wow, this thing I made me feel a thing. They're allowed to because it's maybe something they killed or a dead thing. So a lot of that stemmed from that, was actually seeing these people who made their own taxidermy talk like with such love about them, which I was like, well, that just feels like, because that's how we talk about art a lot of the time, right? Or things we're passionate about is like with a softness or like a tenderness there. So yeah, a lot of it stemmed from that, which was surprising to me. It was surprising and the thing that became like, I think a lot of the crux of it for me, because I was the most interested in seeing like how we can make like the dichotomies between things or weird binaries, like, right? Like what's gross and what's like not gross, or like what's pretty and what's ugly and those things. And there's like that kind of murky middle area is where this kind of thing sits. And that's like what I'm most interested in, I think.
And Jessa, your protagonist, is definitely someone who is avoiding her feelings and finding art in her own taxidermy. But then when her mother starts making art out of the taxidermy, she's very resistant to that and even to accepting it as art.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm always fascinated about in fiction is when writers come up with like a whole nother art form inside their book. Mm-hmm. And Jess's mother's sculptures are really interesting. How did you like writing a book is so hard to begin with, and creating all this, and then you create this whole other thing inside the thing.
Yeah.
How did you come up with those?
I think it's, for me, again, like maybe a lot of things in my writing and just my life started out as a joke and they migrate. Because for me, like the taxidermy started out as a joke, and then it was something I was interested in. And the bit with Jess's mother, like making this kind of like what Jessa considers like pornographic kind of like artistry with taxidermy, came from like this idea about like what would be something that would be so repellent to like a child, would probably be like
someone taking something, like a parent taking something love and making it like sexualized would probably be like abhorrent. So, and wouldn't that be funny? Like, wouldn't it be funny to see it, like just to describe it? So for myself, I was like, oh, this is hilarious to sit and like describe like a bedroom scene between like a taxidermied boar and like some kind of like leopard or something. I don't know, it was like fun to consider. So like, as I was doing the joke, it became this thing where I was like, actually, it's very interesting to me to think about how motherhood is displayed, or like roles not only for like children play, but like what roles like parents play for kids. Like, right, like parents have like this idea about how their kids are, but then like children also have very like serious ideas about who their parents are, right? Specifically with mothers, because there's this idea of like role of like, you're like a caretaker, you take care of me, and you become immediately like, you're not a sexual being, or you don't have this kind of like agency towards like sexuality anymore, that maybe sometimes fathers don't have that kind of thing put upon them as often. So for me, I was like, what does it look like if you want to like take the thing that's like kind of shaped your whole household, right? They run a taxidermy store. The shop is like their whole lives and has been alive, even life even before their family. So what is it if you take that thing that's kind of like been your whole world and be like, well, I'm going to like put my own kind of like hand on it, and I'm going to like be a kind of sexual person because that's who I am. Because like people are like inherently sexual, have like these kind of like things outside of everybody, like just like outside of their kids for sure, but outside of like spouses, outside of whoever, it's like this internalized kind of like, this is like my, how I feel about my body and other people's bodies and things like that. And so the taxidermy became a vehicle, because taxidermy is so physical and so bodied, to like dismantle the taxidermy, to like repurpose it, felt like not even necessarily sexual in a way, but to be like to repurpose the parts, like to like remanufacture the body in different kinds of ways and rethink about it, became very interesting to me as same. So I was like, yeah, I guess like jokes become like, oh shit, I guess this is something I'm thinking about.
Like, oh no, there's feelings in my jokes.
Oh, damn it. I have done
that. They found you.
Yeah.
Oh my. And you are very funny. Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah. When did you know you were a funny person?
Oh, I think that's an interesting question, because I think there are people who would tell you that I am not funny.
Oh, I think you're hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
It's hard to be funny.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to be funny. I think it's hard to like, because like, right, like this is like a thing where it's like humor is so subjective, right? Mm-hmm. Like a thing that makes you laugh doesn't necessarily make anyone laugh, because it can be like, right? Like so many things are embedded into like the stuff that's already built in our lives. So like stuff that's funny to us is often things that have been built in, and it wouldn't necessarily be funny for someone else. But I did spend a lot of time. I have my brother is like a year younger than me. I guess that's like the most similarity. My brother Michael is like a year younger than me, and I would always really try and make him laugh. Like I would just try jokes out on him a lot of the time. So I probably did like a lot of that. Like my sister is like 8 years younger than me, and she did not think I was funny. So I think I did that a lot of the time, but I don't think I ever really thought of myself as funny. Maybe until like, I guess I'll bring up Twitter, but like I got on Twitter and I really used it as a platform when I got on there, not to necessarily talk to other people, but to talk to myself. I would like just like say a bunch of stupid
that's
shit.
All Twitter really is people talking to themselves. Yeah,
where you're just like saying stuff. Like I talk about all the time, like how I think it's like a place where I try out jokes, because it's like I'll say things that I think are funny to me, or like I'll try out a thing where I'm like, how many ways can I tell the same thing and still get like snatch some enjoyment from it, maybe? Or like because when it stops being enjoyable to me, like I like to like tell the same joke like 1,000 different ways and see how many different ways I can tell it where I'm still getting some kind of pleasure from it. And like for a while I was doing like those like pet pun ones, and then I was doing like the ravioli joke, and that one was very funny to me, because, and then I was like, what's the humor I'm getting from it? Like what kind of enjoyment am I getting from it? And the enjoyment I was getting from it was how upset it was making people. Like it would be so funny, like the responses would be in, like a wide range. Some people would like engage with it and be like, yes, I love this so much. And some people would be like, I've been with you from the very beginning and I loved it and I've been supporting you. And you said a ravioli is a pillow, like, fuck you, that's it. Like I'm the worst. And so I would post them and then just mute them. Like, so I wouldn't get any responses to them, but then I would just, like, go look and see, like, what the, like, responses would be, and that was, like, where the humor in it was for me, because it was, like, just this offhand, like, ludicrous, like, absurd statement. But, like, yeah, that just, like, the breadth of emotions that people, like, engage with, that was where, like, the comedy lay for me. I was, like, this is completely absurd, and this is so funny. So it's, like, I don't know. And I also think just, like, I mean, getting back to it, like, when did I, like, think or know I was, like, funny or doing, like, funny stuff is, like, I think I just, I definitely was, like, after I came out, because I think so much of, like, being repressed means that, like, so much of, like, your humor is kind of, like, stuffed inside, too, because, like, a lot of humor comes from maybe, like, unpacking who you are as a person, and if you're not unpacking who you are, then that, like, can't, like, necessarily work, or if it's maybe it's more self-deprecating, too, if it's very internalized. So I think that was helpful, and also just, like, I just feel like at this point, it's like, what would be embarrassing to me? It's like very little. So maybe it just gives me a freedom to just, it's so stupid that it like just doesn't matter at this point. I think I said yesterday, I tweeted something about like, what if Spider-Man, like instead of Web shot spaghetti? And then I think I replied with it like, oh my God, that's a Spidey meatball? That's terrible. It's like so bad. It's like, what do I have to lose at this point? It's just stupid. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not embarrassed, so maybe that helps. I'm not afraid to just be, like, very, very dumb.
Nice. It sounds like Twitter is a place where you can be free and you don't even really need to know if people responded to it. But because, partly because you're pretty well known for being very funny on Twitter, do you now feel this pressure to be funny in your other work? In like your longer form work than Twitter?
That was a thing that kind of happened. It's been less pressure, I think, now, but like when Mostly Dead Things, like when we were like in the editing process with my agent and like trying to send it around, I would get this kind of like feedback sometimes where it was like, oh, but you're like so funny, and I read this and I expected it to be this like really funny kind of thing. And I was like, well, I think the book is funny, but it's different kind of funny. And I, you know, like not everything needs to be like slapstick. Like, right, there's this kind of like idea.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and also, yeah, maybe you do like reading like every day a stupid ravioli joke. Do you want to read like a 300 page?
Yeah, I was like, a book of Twitter jokes. Like,
not the
same thing. Yeah.
Not the same thing, but there is this kind of like very strange expectation. I've also been very lucky because I have like, I think a very cool mix of interesting people who like follow me on Twitter, who's like a lot of librarians, which is cool, because I'm a librarian, and a bunch of like literary people, which is also cool, because like that's great. And then there's like just a bunch of people who like jokes, like follow like comedy accounts. And so I get this like very interesting mix of people now who are like engaging with my written work that I think I maybe wouldn't have had before. So I get like, and like I've had like a lot of people message me and be like, this is the first book I've read in a few years and I really liked it. It made me want to read a bunch of other books. Could you like recommend like some other kind of books that are like doing the same kind of stuff? And that's very cool to me, because like from like a writing standpoint, but also just like a library, like a librarian standpoint, the idea of being like, yes, like I would love to like kind of engage with you in this way. It has made people be like, oh, I had this expectation that you'd be this kind of funny in your work, but it's also brought me this kind of thing where it's like people being like, I didn't engage with like writing this way before, and now I'm engaging with it and I'm excited. Can you like help me like find some other stuff I can explore further? And I think that's very fucking cool, I think.
Speaking of recommending books,
yes.
I had asked you, I love hearing what writers are reading or what influenced you or just kind of what you like in that sort of chain of recommendation. First of all, have you been reading lately?
It's been more difficult. I will tell
you
that. I think it's really hard for anybody because it's like this idea of like, when there's like a pressure just on you, like it's like how people are like, oh, now that you're home, like you can read or like finally write that novel. Like, what does that mean? Like, no, it's like a bunch of like weird stress and anxiety. And those things don't build towards like, oh, here's a freedom. I have to sit down and just like create something. There are definitely books though, like, yeah, I have like a laundry list of stuff I want to recommend. So, I mean, there's definitely been things I've been reading for just like a levity, like Sam Irby's new book. Wow, no thank you. I was like, I needed the shit out of that. Like, I was like, I need it. Like, she also has this really great like thing you can subscribe to for free, like the Judge Mathis recap, where she does Judge Mathis recaps every day and comes in an email to you for free. I read it every day, and it is like a true source of joy for me. And then also like R. Eric Thomas, Here For It came out, and that I think that's very funny and very good. And I was like, I just was like happy to sit and like read something fucking funny. Like I was like, I just want to like be out of myself and like have things be funny right now. Like that's really good. Some other books that I was able to kind of like sit with that are newer right now, like Chelsea Beaker's new book, Godshot. It's so good. Like it's such a good book. And then Peter Kispert has a short fiction collection that's very gay and I think very interesting. I Know You Know Who I Am. That collection I think is like, it's like stories that are about like being gay and lying. It's interesting to think of queerness a lot of the times as like a personality that we're trying to build, because like queer people have like this like kind of like, oh, like I came out and then I'm like kind of understanding myself. So I'm forming my own personality. I'm forming like who I am as a person, and like the idea of like, you know, things as being like branded or like a right, like queer culture and like what that is. And so it's like very interesting to read like story collection where that's happening. I think it's really good. The thing I have been able to like kind of read and sit with is I've been reading a lot of poetry. Yeah, I love Ada Limón. Like I mean, everyone does. Her shit has been kind of getting me through, I think, because I love sitting with those, with the poems, like The Carrying is so good, like Bright Dead Things is so good. She does this thing with poetry that I think is so impressive, even like inside of fiction, which is that like, it's the exact way to say or describe something, but I've just never thought of it that way before. And so I think like her poetry does this a lot. And also like so much of her poetry is this kind of sitting outside and like things that are very alive and very physical and very bodied. And it's just very beautiful in this kind of way. And also like a tenderness to it. So like I've been reading a ton of her just because I was like, it's the kind of thing where I feel like I can touch language again a little bit, because sometimes it feels very for me and very distant. So that's been like a godsend, I think, is reading her stuff. Also been rereading Mary Robeson. I love that book. It's so funny and weird and also tender and also like just stupid sometimes. I really like her willingness to engage with like stupidity in that book, I think is very funny. So that's been like a comfort reread, because that's a thing too. I was like, I want to like, I'm just, if I can read right now, like maybe sometimes it just needs to be something I just I'm going back to is like feels like a little book hug, like comfort. So like that I think has been good. But yeah, there are so many good books out right now. I wish I could like make myself read them and not be like set them down every three pages and then open the news.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I read Mostly Dead Things when it came out. It of course just came out in paperback, and rereading it to prep for this interview, I think jump-started me back into reading again, because I think similar to what you were getting out of Mary Robeson, like it was familiar, but I found new things in it and it's funny, but you know, like we said at the beginning, very tender too. So thank you. Like genuinely, it was really a joy to like go back there. And I think it's to sell for you a little bit right now. I think it's like, it's very transportive because it's very Florida. I know you've talked about this a lot and you're not in Florida right now. You're in Vegas, but just being so immersed in this place that is very different than where I am was kind of what I needed.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that makes me happy. I miss Florida. It's like, this is the longest I've ever been away from Florida, which is very strange.
Really?
Like, yeah.
What do you miss about Florida right now?
I definitely miss the outside spaces that I had access to that I could go to. For a while here, Kayla and I were really lucky. First of all, because we had a car here, because we drove all the way over to Vegas. It was fun. Yeah, we stopped in and like stayed with the Jamie Attenberg in like New Orleans. And then we like went to Austin and visited some people. And then we went to like Albuquerque, and we just kind of like road tripped it for like a week and got to Vegas. But so we have a car here. So for a while, like the national parks, like, cause it's a bunch of desert and stuff out here, you can drive places. So for a while we were able to do that, but they closed all of those up. And this is like, so we're like not on the strip. It's like downtown Las Vegas. So it's like the arts district. And we, before things were closed, it was great because we could walk down and go to like some restaurants or go to bars or whatever. But now there's not really places to walk to or be outside. Also, it's finally starting into that like desert heat, which is like deadly hot, like no humidity or anything. So I miss the outside spaces in Florida, because that's something I did pretty religiously every day. Was I took like a 2 mile walk around the lake in my neighborhood like every night. I miss, that was something like, because it was like a kind of like a recharge for me, I think. Like I would be able to just like be alone. Like a lot of times I wouldn't even like take my phone out with me. I would just like go walk around and just like hear everything, right? Like everything that's outside. Like Florida is like so alive feeling. Like the air feels like a touch, and like the animals are, there's always like bugs on you. There's the animals in your house. There's everything. And like, so it's like, it's, you're never alone. It feels like a living entity, like it's sentient. So it's like, I miss that feeling of being like touched by like place, maybe. I also miss my yard and my kiddie pool.
Are you, I'm asking this as like kind of a personal thing. Are you tired of receiving taxidermy gifts? Are people like still giving you taxidermy all the time?
I got like, this is the thing, is like so often those gifts are like so personal or like personalized that I haven't gotten sick of them, because it always comes with some like very endearing or super weird story. So for me, I love that, because it's like, it's just always like, I got, where was I? I was in Tampa. I think I was at like a university, and I was at USF, and like I was there, and somebody came up and they had a whole bag for me of individually wrapped like things. And everything I unwrapped had like a story associated with it. Like they gave me like a bat skeleton and like in it, and they're like, oh, and this is from this place. And then like a weird little fish like in formaldehyde. And then like, yeah, just all this stuff. And it's always like, I think because it feels so personal and so extremely weird, like it has not gotten tiring to me. Honestly, it feels like it's just like, it feels like weird, macabre, like love letters.
Well, I'm like, it doesn't surprise me, but it's great that people, the book has meant so much to somebody that they're like, I need to give this to you. Like, I need to try to give something, like respond to it in this way.
I mean, I think that's nice too. Like, I would also get people bringing me like beers in line, and I loved that. The best one was like in Nashville, this like really awesome woman came up, like she'd been waiting in the line. And she came up and she put like a 6-pack of like High Life down. And she was like, I brought these for you. I know you love beer, but I got so nervous in the line, I drank 2 of them. So it was like 2 empties and then like 4 bottles. I was like, you're the best. This is incredible.
I have 2 pages of questions that I obviously am not going to get to. I love your work so much. And I'm just so excited to have a chance to talk to you. And yeah, fun. Congratulations on the paperback, sleek new, cheaper pocket copy.
I mean, they just did, Tin House just did such a good job with all of the stuff that they did for this book. And the paperback has like, right, like reader questions in the back.
Yeah.
Like the clubs, and it's got like an interview that was like from Long Reads, which I thought was like really fun. Kind of extra stuff they put into it. So it's like you're getting some bonus features with the paperback, and it's still that same beautiful cover that Tin House did for me. They just like knocked it out of the park with that, I think. I love everything they did.
Yeah, they're great. Portland's own Tin House. So
they're wonderful.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh, it's been so good just to see you. Thank you so much. Congrats on the paperback.
Thank you for having me. This was delightful.
Thank you to Kristen Arnett for joining us on Long Distance from the Archive Project. I had such a good time, as I think you can hear, talking to Kristen about her book, about writing and reading. I hope you'll pick up a copy of Mostly Dead Things from your local independent bookstore. We've also included Kristen's reading recommendations in the episode notes. Let us know what you thought and which authors you'd like us to talk to in the future. Find us at literary-arts.org and at Literary Arts on social media. I'm Amanda Bullock, and this has been Long Distance from the Archive Project.
All right, that's it for this episode of Long Distance, a podcast series of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Long Distance is edited by Liz Olofsson, with production oversight from Crystal Liguori. Special thanks to the Literary Arts staff, board, and community. This podcast would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.